Hello, property nomads. Hope you're doing well. We've got a fantastic interview lined up for you today. I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Poynton Ryan. We're going to be talking about debt reduction, debt management, finding out more about Sarah's life journey from being or having no cash to now being a very successful entrepreneur, both in property and having multiple businesses as well. So this is going to be a fantastic roller coaster, if I can get my words out, of an interview. And Sarah, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for being here. And roller coaster is a really interesting word because I feel like that's what I've been on the last like 8 years or so. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Looking forward to, I always learn a lot from doing interviews, and I'm sure everyone listening is going to learn a lot as well. I did fail to neglect in my introduction that you're also the author of Money Mechanics,
I
and we're
am.
going to go into that as well. I mean, well, as we just alluded to, where it all started, and we were saying off air that, at points you said you were, dare I use this term politely, very poor, had no cash, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you
Pretty
said
much.
that you had to learn money mechanics first before even getting involved into property. So if you can just tap into a couple of your situation back then and a couple of really key things that you learned, because I'm sure people listening to this might be in similar situations now.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. So 2015 is kind of the year where everything changed in my world. And the couple of years prior to that, so in 2013, I'd launched my first company. I'd left my job to run my company. It was a photo booth business working in the weddings and events industry. And at that point, I was like, I've made it. I've left my job. I'm working on my own. Life is good. Like everything's easy. This is me made for life. What I had completely underestimated is the intensity of what it takes to run a business. So I could get bookings for the photo booth and I could run the photo booth at events and I could do that. And that was easy for me. But what I didn't know how to do was accounting, budgeting, HR, recruitment, all of that sort of stuff. So I ran my business for a couple of years. And by the time 2015, well, the end of 2014, 15 kicked in, I was in loads of debt. My business was failing. I was subsidizing the company with personal money, which was mainly, and I was struggling to pay my bills, but I needed to pay the staff and do the job. And I was in a really not good place. So by like the middle of 2015, I was about £60,000 in debt. I'd had to go back to work, working as a consultant, like a sales consultant. So I was running my photo booth business and I'd had to go back to having a job, which was soul destroying at the time. It was a good step actually for me. Now I can look back at it and I can say actually it was a really good move. By the time I felt like I'd failed. So at that point, I was also getting married as well. So I was trying to run, like plan a wedding and pay for a wedding and all of these different things that were happening. So I just remember in 2015, like situations where we'd have all the different bills, all the envelopes out and the bills that we needed to pay. And we'd have to pick, well, we'll pay that one because we can't pay them all. So we would just pick the priority one. And, I used to be really frightened of like brown envelopes. I've still got a bit of a weird relationship with brown envelopes because a brown envelope is like council tax or HMRC or Companies House. It's like a serious letter. So I just never used to open them because I was like, if I don't know about it, my head's in the sand, it'd be fine. And actually, you can't, you have to open brown letters because they're important, right? So I still have a rubbish relationship with brown envelopes now because not that I owe anyone any money. It really used to affect me. So kind of cutting a long story short, we got married and I remember saying to Andy, we were talking about like the next chapter of our lives, what we wanted to do. And we were saying everything like, should we go traveling? Well, that'd be great, but we've got no money. Shall we get a dog? Well, that'd be great, but we've got no money. Shall we have a baby? That'd be fun, but we've got no money. Shall we buy a house? Great, but we've got no money. And everything just kept coming back to this money issue. And, I was 35, 33, 35. I can't even really remember. I'm 40 now. So 8 years. So I was 33, 32, 33. And I remember thinking in that week after we got married, this isn't going to be my life. This absolutely cannot be the rest of our life. We can't be in debt forever. And the thing is, we had credit cards. I'd had credit cards at uni. I'd got into loads of debt through just mismanagement of money, a misunderstanding of money, really. I hadn't really, there's no sob story. It's just, I just didn't understand how money worked. I didn't realize that when you have a 0% credit card, eventually that runs out and then they charge you. No one taught me that as a kid. No one explained that. So all my 0% ran out. It clicked over onto big interest. My credit wasn't good enough to get 0%. Again, it all just got really messy. So I had to start to learn about money. So as I started to make more money, so I launched my property business in 2015 off the back of that conversation with Andy. And I was running my photo booth company. I was working as a consultant and I started a rent-to-rent company in 2015. And that business actually took off really quick, much quicker than I was anticipating. If I'm honest, I kind of started it with a bit of a hazy, I'm not sure people really are doing this. I feel like the trainers are full of rubbish, but let's see what happens. And to my surprise, I made a lot of money very, very quickly. But the problem with making a lot of money very quickly when you don't understand money is that it very quickly can disappear as well. So I made it my mission to learn everything I could about the mechanics of how money actually works and how you can clear debt in the most efficient ways, how you can prepare for your future in intelligent ways where actually, but without having to say no to stuff now, so you can have a balance of life now and life later. I learned about things like preparing for retirement and investment and all these things. And so, yeah, I've been on this roller coaster, to use your words, for the last 8 years. And I feel like I feel a bit pissed off, if I'm honest, that nobody taught me when I was 18 or 16 or 15 how money worked. I wish someone at school had said to me, this is how a credit card works. This is how debt works. This is how you can leverage good debt. And this is the difference between good and bad debt. And so now I'm at the point where I'm trying to spread the word. I've written the book, obviously. I've always got one to hand. I've written the book to really help people understand how to engineer their money. And one of those things is I also invest a lot in property. I've got my own buy-to-let portfolio. I'm in the middle of a flip at the minute. And I invest a lot in other things. So that's a whistle-stop tour of what it's looked like. Hopefully that explains it.
No, it does. And I think that's really useful. And thanks for sharing. I mean, without looking to go down rabbit holes, I think it is what you've highlighted is things that I've studied a lot in the last few years as well. And it's more, I see a damning indictment of what we're actually learning in terms of there should be more teachings out there with regards to finance. And as you said, the difference between good debt, bad debt, you know, debt isn't bad. It's a tool if it's used in the right way.
Absolutely.
You know, that it's a very, very powerful thing. And Rich Dad, Poor Dad, all that sort of stuff, so I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet. It's definitely more of a damning indictment of the financial system. And without going down a rabbit hole, there is probably, and there always will be, and there always has been, a lot of shady shit that goes down in the Bank of England and all that sort of stuff that is important to know about. Not to the point where you scare yourself, although I do a bit sometimes, but having an understanding, especially when you're involved in property as well, because I also think that a lot of property investors or a lot of property people don't have a grasp of the basic economics. And if you don't have a grasp of the basic economics, it then can affect your planning because then
Economics of how money works and the system works and debt works and that sort of stuff, but also basic economics of how business finances work. So like the difference between gross profit and net profit, the difference between turnover and net profit, which, I mean, this is my pet hate when people say I made seven figures. No, you invoiced seven figures, you made a lot less. And it's those sorts of things, the fundamentals of money and how it works in both the economy and economics in the, like, the biggest sense, but also in just understanding your own personal finances and that of your business finances if you are somebody who also runs a company.
Completely agree. I think, I'm probably gone for hours about that. I think I said off air, I'm feeling part two already because we can talk.
I'd love to come back for part two.
We can talk about that. Rather than I've stopped myself again going down areas I shouldn't go down for this podcast because we've got to keep it property focused. For those people that might not know the difference, let's briefly explain to people just the difference between good debt and bad debt, and then we'll start looking at the property side. But what's the difference between good debt and bad debt, and how did you then manage your situation to get rid of the bad debt?
Really great question, and probably something that everybody needs to understand the fundamentals of. So bad debt, in its simplest term, is that any debt that is costing you money to have. So any debt that is draining your personal resources to have is bad debt. Any debt that is adding to your personal resources is good debt. That's the best way to explain it. So in tangible terms, if you go and put a holiday to Ibiza on a credit card and you buy a whole new wardrobe and you buy tickets to the clubs and all of the things that go with a holiday to Ibiza, all the champagne and all the fun, whatever it goes, that goes on a credit card. And you spend the rest of the year paying that credit card off out of your wages or your overdraft or whatever, that is bad debt. Although it was fun to spend in the first place, that debt is not going to add to your resources. It adds to your experience of life, but it doesn't add to your personal wealth. Whereas good debt is something like if you were to take out a business loan, for example, like a startup business loan, and you take that, let's say you borrowed £5,000 to buy some stock to sell in an online retail store. That stock, that's an asset in itself, you've used debt to get to that point. You buy that stock then is sold, and that is going to create revenue and hopefully profit in your business. So the debt you can clear out of the resources that are being created by the thing that's been bought. So it's going to add to your personal resources. And where this happens in property is where you are using other people's money to buy assets. Mm-hmm. The bank, their money. Bridging loans, it's other people's money. Private investment, it's other people's money. So it allows you to, you know, if I've got £10,000, I can't buy a house. But if I've got £10,000 and I couple that with a mortgage, say, I mean, £10,000 was a bad example. Let me say £25,000. I've got £25,000. I can't really do much with that in the property world. But if I couple that with other people's money, so I get a £75,000 mortgage and my £25,000, I'm leveraging good debt. So the debt is £75,000, but that £75,000 goes into me creating a cash flow through rental or creating capital growth through or added value through, you know, renovation or turning something into flats or whatever it might be. So that's the difference. And in property, we often use other people's money to be and leverage that debt, that good debt, to be able to make money for ourselves.
Perfect. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think that some people are going to be listening to this going, yeah, you know, thumbs up. I get that. I know there's going to be people listening to this going, oh, that might be a light bulb moment for them. And I think that from my experience, I'd add to that is, although, you know, it's a taboo to talk about finance if you're a British person, I would say, you know, I love a spreadsheet. I am meticulous. I could tell you what goes in, what goes out, what goes up, what goes down, you know, asset column, liabilities, the whole lot, because I enjoy doing that. And also I'm a bit tight. And that's my wife that says that as well. I'm a bit stingy. But I think having all of that being said, having a way to monitor that is incredibly important, because it helps you to then make decisions.
Yeah,
you know, about moving forward and, you know, all of this sort of stuff. But no, thank you for that really good example there. So moving forwards then, and let's come back for part two, and we'll talk more money mechanics, I think, and economics. Come back for part two.
Yeah.
So let's focus on property. You mentioned there that you had a chat with your husband and that you then went down the rent-to-rent area first. And I think you mentioned sourcing as well.
Yeah.
And this, I'm assuming, was all because of you might not have had the cash in the bank. You were following a strategy that you, as I think even you said, yeah, I'm not sure about this, but it kicked off. And then at the same time, your money mechanics are improving. So everything's looking a bit rosier, I imagine. Tell us a bit more about how that felt in terms of that rent to rent just kicking off, and what exactly were you doing in the rent to rent sphere?
At the beginning, I really liked rent to rent. Like I really did. I thought, wow, this is, I can get yeses quickly. I haven't really got to have a lot of money to get in. The notion that you don't have to have any money to do rent to rent is nonsense. Anyone telling you that on a stage, they're lying to you. You do need some money. You need insurance at the very least. You need some rent to pay to the landlord at the very least. You need some money, right? The sourcing is the same. You need some money. You can't do it with no money. You can do it with none of your money. Like you can borrow money. You can have investment. There's all different, but you need some money. So just let me put that aside because that's probably another whole episode of a podcast. Rent to rent for me at the beginning, I really enjoyed it. And I was learning something new. I'm someone, I love to learn. I love to practice. And I actually was very good at it as well. So I could get houses quite quickly and we could fill them quite quickly. And I loved that whole energy of it. And, you know, at our peak between my business partner and I, then we had 96 units. So it was fast paced. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of people. There was a lot of moving parts. And, you know, it was great fun. And we were making a lot of money. I was making more money than I'd ever seen, right? But I didn't set my business up right because I had no systems. There was no operational, because no one had taught me how to run a business still. My first business failed because I didn't know how to run a business. And as I was doing my second business, I was very aware that I was getting into the same problems. And I was like, what is causing this? Why am I getting into the same problems? And it was because I had no idea how to operationally run a business. I didn't know how to build data lists. I didn't know how to plan for tax. I didn't know that you need a budget for marketing. I didn't know any of that. And no one had sat me down and taught me that. And, you know, I have a training company now and that's what we teach. It's the best practice. It's the operational implementation stuff, because theory is 10 a penny in this industry, right? And you can learn theory from lots of different places. Some of it's very expensive. Some of it's not so expensive, but it's just theory. But if you don't know how to do, if you don't know how to implement that theory, you'll never make any money. And that was my biggest, one of my biggest lessons when I was running my rent to rent business and my sourcing business. And, you know, we had 96 units in my rent to rent business. I did 100 grand in sourcing fees in my first 12 months. I went hard and I was doing incredibly well, but I had no idea what I was doing in terms of making that sustainable. You can run a business like that for a year and not drown. But longer than that, I started to buckle. I started to get really stressed. My marriage was on the rocks because I was always at work. I was never at home. You know, I wasn't eating well. I was grabbing a sandwich in between stuff. I was not looking after myself at all because I was so headstrong into building this business. But I didn't really know how to build it in a way where I ran the business. I didn't just become a person that worked for the business. So the first year or so was great. Actually, I fell fully out of love with rent to rent in the end. And I closed my rent to rent company and walked away from it because I was miserable at the end, in truth. And I think this is something that's really important. Anyone who's going into rent to rent or sourcing or any strategy, make sure you build a business, not a job, because there's no point coming out of a job to have another job. Actually, you'll be way more stressed running a business and you being the person that's in it all the time than you were in your job, because their buck stops with you here, whereas there's a bit more of a buffer in your jobs, right? And so I think that was a really hard lesson for me to learn. And I was like, okay. So now I'm in kind of phase 3 and 4. Actually, I try really hard to make sure I'm always trying to improve the operation as I'm improving the revenue and the profitability at the same time. But what I always say to people as well is, I started in rent to rent and sourcing because I thought that that's where I had to start because I didn't have any money. But I really wish someone had said to me at the time, well, the effort and energy and what you're going to have to learn and put into practice to be able to build a business in rent to rent to earn the money you want to earn. Actually, if you took that same energy and that same determination and you just learn a slightly different thing, which is raising money, you can actually buy houses and assets and things like that. The thing with rent to rent is it's great for cash flow, but it doesn't build any wealth. Mm-hmm. So actually, if the market shifts or legislation changes or lockdown happens or anything like that, you're at risk of your business just shutting overnight. Whereas when you own things, actually, there is an insurance in the fact that you have the bricks, that you can always sell the bricks if the shit hits the fan. So I wish someone had explained that to me at the beginning, because I probably wouldn't have done rent to rent at all. I probably would have jumped straight to flips, and I'd be much further on than I am now. I earned my stripes. I'm happy with my journey, but I always say to people, like, if you actually don't care about rent to rent and you're not really excited by serviced accommodation and you don't really want to build portfolios for other people, then you don't have to just because you've got no money. You can learn to raise money or JV with somebody, and you can do stuff that you're excited about, because running a business is hard. Running a business you don't enjoy is horrendous. So run a business that's hard, but you are excited about at the very least, is my advice.
Again, that's something I agree with. I think I always emphasize that it's important to enjoy doing what you do. If you don't enjoy doing it, don't do it. If circumstances, you know, allow. One key thing I take away from that, and there's some very useful things that you said there, is that I'm not in the rent-to-rent section at all. You know, it's buy-to-let, it's develop, you know, moving on to develop, all that sort of stuff. But I think for the people that are going to be listening, I would say congratulations, because you had built up a successful rent-to-rent business, which isn't easy. But also you mentioned there, you know, invoicing £100,000 in sourcing fees in the first 12 months. So I'd say congratulations for that. And also for people listening, as you said, this works with what you've just said as well, is, you know, go and give it a go if you want to, if you think that works for you, because obviously everyone's got different skill sets.
Of course.
I think it's very admirable that you've also looked at that and gone, actually, hold my hands up. This wasn't working because X, Y, and Z was happening. I need to take a step back from this. Or hang on a minute, I've learned a bit more now from money mechanics, and you're going to move into the next stage of property ownership and business ownership.
My first, really, all I could see when I started in property was, how do I clear my debt? My only milestone was, I wasn't intending to be in property forever. I wasn't intending to write a book back then. I wasn't, you know, intending to run a training company and all the things that my life is now. None of that was on the table. All I wanted to do was clear 60 grand of debt. And then I was going to go and get a real job. In my head, I was just going to do this for a minute and then I'll do something serious with my career. And so I was working to chisel away at that money. It took me 23 months to clear my 60 grand. So I started in the November of the 2015, and by the 17 Christmas, my debt was gone. So then it was a very different situation. I've got this business that's out of control on the basis, it's doing well and making loads of money, but it's like a monster that I didn't enjoy at all. But I've now got to a position where the money I'm earning is my money. It's not got to go to the bank. It's not got to go to a loan. It's none of those things. That's a really interesting headspace to be in, because I just got quite lost at that point, because I was like, I don't know what to do. I did all the typical things that most people do when they're fresh to money. I bought a fancy watch. I got a really nice car. I did all the things that we all do. I bought a beautiful handbag that I love. I mean, I use it almost every day. I love it. Like, I did all those things.
Yeah.
And then I was like, right, well, you can only have so many handbags. You can only use one at a time. I don't need more than a couple of watches. Like, what am I going to do now? And that's when I really started to learn about investment. And buying houses is one of those things. And I love a sexy single buy-to-let. Like, I love a buy-to-let. I know that's not common in our industry, but I actually do quite like them. Then also started looking at things like, okay, well, how can I invest in startup companies? How can I invest in crypto? How can I invest in stocks and shares and options and all of these things? And so now it's evolved into, the money I earn is my money, and I don't need any more stuff. I've got enough stuff. Like, I'm not interested in this. It doesn't motivate me really. Like, I've got lovely jewelry. I've got lovely handbags. I've got lovely car, house. I live in my dream house. I want to buy a house abroad. That's the next thing, I suppose, that I want. But now it's okay. I'm laying the foundations for 45-year-old me to be able to retire if I want to, or 50-year-old me to be able to travel the world for a year because I want to. Now it's about that layer. So I think anyone with money, when you've not got any, it's important to get some. That's like the first bit, clear the debt. The next bit then is about enjoying it, because you'll have worked hard to be able to get to that point. So enjoy what you've done, whatever serves you for enjoyment. You know, a watch might not be your thing. It might be a holiday or whatever. That's fine. But then really think about, okay, what am I doing to prepare myself for 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Because actually, no one needs any more stuff. We've all got enough stuff. Like, simplifying life is actually what it's all about, I personally think. Laying the foundations for a simple future actually is, in my mind, the holy grail of it all. So that's where the journey that you can go on, But it comes down to having really good operational business best practices day to day in the way you spend your time, your money, your effort, in the support that you get and what you actually do. If you get those things right, everything else will build from there.
I'll nod, and this, I know this doesn't look good on a podcast because I am nodding. I'm smiling in absolute agreement. And again, I think that, you know, we should definitely attack a new episode with regards to things that you mentioned there, you know, stocks, bonds, cryptos, because, you know, for me, I'm all about the metals personally, as well as other bits and bobs. But again, this isn't the episode for that. Two book recommendations I'll make, and apologies for butting into your book recommendation.
That's actually fine.
Money Mechanics is what we're here to talk about. Definitely recommend people go and do that. But in order to have also a look at the concept that you're talking about and that we've spoken about briefly, because I've just finished rereading it, is Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki.
I've not read that. I'll have a look at that.
Yeah, I would recommend it for a couple of reasons, because he's talking about four different, you know, how to make that transition from being either an employed person or self-employed person over to the business and investor side. So you've clearly done that. And it's that going from the self-employed or employed side and jumping the other side. Yeah. It comes with different traits, different things, you know, understanding your assets and liabilities that we've discussed as well. So I would recommend, if you've not read that, I would recommend reading it. And for anyone listening, also for everyone listening, Cash Flow Quadrant is crucial to understanding this. I'm trying to keep as much as I can on property, but I'm waylaid with these ideas of crypto and mechanics and whatnot. And I love a good buy to let as well, although that is so not 2024, according to all the gurus.
No, it's
out
not.
There. It's really not 2024.
But it'll stay the distance, let's be honest.
Well, that brings me to my question. I was gonna ask you, so in terms of the property side now, you mentioned that you love a good buy to let, and just looking at the bricks and mortar, what's working for you? Is it just buy to let, or do you do HMOs? What does
so I don't have any HMOs at all. Okay. Would I buy HMOs? Maybe, but if I was gonna buy HMOs, it would need to be like a portfolio of them. I don't just want one. I feel like that's not really what would be right for me. So if anyone's selling HMO portfolios, give me a call for sure. I think in terms of what I want to see happen in my investment world, in the property space specifically, you know, I'm in the middle of a flip at the minute. We're turning a two bed into a three bed. Like, I like those simple terrace houses, two, three bed. I love that market, because when the market's not good, that market doesn't really stop, because two and three beds will always sell. In my mind, I'm not quite at the building five bed detached million-pound homes. That for me is not where I'm at. For me, they stick when the market's not great. And the market's volatile at the moment. It has been volatile. I've got a lot of confidence in our market, though. Like, I really have. And I know some people are like, there's going to be this crash and housing prices are coming down and blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, yes, last year, I actually think interest rates are going to come down. I actually think it's going to settle. I think that lenders are going to be jumping over themselves to be lending. And here we are, the second week of January, and we've got like under 4% 5-year fixed rates, which is amazing. We've got people doing cashback offers again, which just didn't happen last year. And what that tells us as investors buying is that the banks have confidence in these figures too. The banks have confidence in the market, but they are fighting for your business, which means they've not hit their lending targets for last year, or they've got new targets that they need to maximize. So we're going to start to see better deals. You know, the Liz Truss zone of craziness that happened, yeah, it created some ripples. And anyone who was refinancing at that point, it was hard, right? And, you know, a lot of deals fell out. There was a lot of investors that didn't get paid back on time and things like that. Like, I saw it happening. But we're out of that now. And people are still saying, oh, it's a bad market. That was over a year ago. It's not actually a bad market. There's stuff on the market that you can get for good prices. There is great builders out there that are looking for work and want to work hard again, which actually out of COVID wasn't the same. We've got vendors that actively want to sell because people have been stuck for so long because of COVID and haven't really done. Then we had this year of craziness. People haven't done anything. People want to be moving around again. And we've got a housing crisis. We do not have enough homes to service the demand. So it buy-to-lets, single buy-to-lets, whether it's HMOs, whatever you do, people are buying houses. People want to rent houses. And so in my mind, property is still a pretty okay place to be. make sure you're backing up your contingencies, make sure, you know, you're doing all the right checks on your tenants, because tenant legislation is definitely a thing that we need to be aware of right now. And the changes in that space, I think, is probably going to be more relevant to us than changes in things like interest rates, on a negative way. I mean, interest rates and stuff like that, I think, will be positive this year. Tenant legislation is where it will start to become unattractive this year, I think. But that's, you know, we just have to see what happens with that.
Yeah, it's sort of opening that can of worms, really, isn't it? Because what people say and do, and then the impact of that. Recorded a podcast a little while ago about the EPCC ratings that, you know, were meant to come in, and now they're gone, and the uncertainty that created for landlords meant that, you know, quite a few landlords with portfolios were selling. And of course, economics 101, when your demand for rental property is sky high, and it will be for our lifetimes, you're then decreasing the supply because people are selling up, and it might be first time buyers that are buying. So what do you think, what's going to happen to the rents? Oh, funny enough, they've gone up. And
exactly that.
You know, but then of course the landlords were all greedy right wing capitalist pigs. So we can't win, to be perfectly honest.
We cannot win.
That's a different story. But it's refreshing actually, Sarah, that to be sat here listening to this going and in hearing that, do you know what, this, you know, you've had a long time in property, you've built up sourcing business, you know, which, you know, rent to rent as well. And it's refreshing to talk to someone and to listen to someone that is, do you know what, I like this, dare I say it, regular, I like this regular flip, I like this buy to let. And because you're looking at the underlying economics as well, going, well, these are working in my favor, happy days. Now it's refreshing to hear that. So again, kudos.
Another simple flip, the one we're doing at the minute, we're going to make $75,000 on it. I mean, for what? Well, there's the conveyancing period. It's probably 14 weeks of work, which I'm not the one doing it. So I haven't got to lay a brick or do a thing. I just had to analyze it well, get it negotiated well. And then I've got, 4 months to sell it. Within a year, $75,000, that's like three times what my annual wage was when I was in a job. And I probably have spent, 30 hours on it? Flips are great.
Exactly. I think it's just, it's nice and refreshing to hear that, you know, there are people out there that are still doing, and again, I don't want to belittle it, but when I say people are still out there doing the basics, you know, I still like a buy to let out and myself. We still like looking at them. You know, he's working on more, you know, bigger stuff now, but it's really just good to hear someone say, yeah, do you know what? There's $75,000 in this. It's a 2 to a 3 bed. It's in our gold mine area, wherever that is. And happy days. It's just so great to hear that. I think definitely part two. We could be greedy and say part three, because I think there's a lot of different investment cycles and whatnot to speak about. And I think we've got a lot of things aligned that we haven't touched upon so far. What I would say, though, is how do people get a hold of you, and how do people find Money Mechanics? Because again, I'd recommend reading that. So yeah, how do people get in contact with you, Sarah?
So Money Mechanics is on Amazon. So you can just put Money Mechanics, Sarah Poynton Ryan into Amazon, and it will be the one thing that pops up. The paperback is on Amazon and available now. The audiobook is being released on the 25th of January, 2024. So depending when you're listening to this, both might be available, or one might be. In terms of me and how to get hold of me, you can find me on all of the social media platforms. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. If you put Sarah Poynton Ryan into Facebook, I'm the only one, so I'll pop up. I'd love to hear from any of you that I can help. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I get asked about a lot is things like process maps or budget trackers and stuff like that. If anyone listening to this just sends me a DM with Property Nomads podcast, literally just put those words, and what I'll do is I'll send you a copy of either one of our investor onboarding process maps if that's what you need, or I can send you a link to our budget tracker if that would be more helpful, or I can send you both. Just text me, like send me that in a DM, and I'll know that you've come from here and you've heard this conversation, and I'll make sure you get those resources.
Fantastic. I will put links to that in the show notes. And again, I'd recommend that people, as many people listen to this as you can, appreciate that everyone's always going to be on their own path in their different situations. But if you do not understand the concept of good debt, bad debt, and the very basics, you do need to go and, you know, research this, do get the budget tracker from Sarah, listen to the book or read the book as well, Cashflow Quadrant as well, because once you understand that, that will help you, not just in your personal life, but in, as we've discussed, in various property ventures that you have, and of course in other areas of investing that I'm sure we'll touch upon in part two. But Sarah, I would say thank you very much. If you had just a couple of pieces of advice, or just one piece of advice you give to people who are either struggling with debt or struggling to get started in property, what would you say to people?
Just start small. Like, if you've got £60,000 of debt, don't worry about clearing £60,000 of debt. Worry about clearing £10 of debt. Once you clear that £10, clear the next £10. Then worry about the next £20. Once you've cleared that £40, worry about the next £40. Don't worry about the big, big thing. Like, people in property as well, you want to become a millionaire. Don't worry about becoming a millionaire. That will be a consequence. It will happen eventually. It will be a consequence of you doing one deal, then the next one, then the next one, then the next one. Being a millionaire in property is not that hard to do. And I know that sounds really nonchalant of me, but actually, depending where you are in the country, you could be a millionaire in one deal. Don't worry about being a millionaire. Don't worry about clearing £60,000 of debt. Worry about just the next step you've got to take. Worry about the next milestone, then the next one, then the next one. And if you follow all of those, the consequence will be your debt will be gone. You'll be a millionaire. You'll be whatever it is that you want to be. So just think smaller, not in terms of your goals, but in terms of your actions. Just do everything in bite-sized chunks and you'll make way quicker progress.
Perfect. I think that's a great place to finish off. You know, how you eat that elephant or whatever the phrase is. So thank you very much for that. Yeah, look forward to cracking on with part two, maybe in the part three, because there's so many different areas we can cover. But Sarah, thank you very much for your time today.
Pleasure. Thank you.